Attention, mill spouses, families, and service members. It's now time for another empowering episode of Army Wife Talk Radio, the leading and longest running podcast of its kind. AWTR is here to engage, educate, and encourage you by sharing dynamic interviews, social media connections, news, and empowering military life information. Here are your AWTR hosts, your Army Wife Network Command Team.
Hey everyone, it's a great day to be joining us for our latest Army Wife Talk Radio podcast. I absolutely love that our podcast is designed to engage, educate, encourage, and empower all of you. So whether you are a spouse or a family member of those serving, you matter to us. Whether you're in the States or somewhere else around the globe, we are here for you. And by the way, I'm Caroline Schaefer, Army Wife Talk Radio producer, and this is show number 724.
Hi there, Caroline and listeners. I'm Joy Ortiz, Army Wife Network social media assistant. Caroline is right, you know, we want you to know that Army Wife Network cares about you and you're not going through this journey alone. We have the resources that not only meet you exactly where you are, but remind you how many others are going through this journey as well. We make sure and create supportive segments for you, such as Social Media Scoop, AWN Info Objective, Empowerment in Action, interviews with empowering guests, and so much more. In fact, as far as interviews go, you'll want to stick around for the upcoming interview conducted by owner and commander, Sherita Knobloch, as she talks with guest Ashley Murray about the sacred sisterhood and the trials of life.
Ashley has a powerful and moving story, one that I'm looking forward to hearing. And before we get started, I just want to say to Joy, hello, and I'm super excited to be hosting with you again. So tell me what's been going on since last time that we chatted.
Well, my husband had hip surgery. I'm not sure if we mentioned this in the last one that we did, but he has two tears, one on each side of his hips. And the doctor said when they saw the MRI, that it's rare to have one tear, one labral tear, but it's even rarer to have two. So they advised him to have one done and not, or one at a time done and not two at the same time. So we had the first one done a couple of weeks ago, and it was a super busy day. I took the day off, and it sucked too because our son turned 5 that day, and we really couldn't do anything for him. Yeah. But it was a long day. We got there at like 11. But he didn't even get wheeled back into surgery until about 3:15. So, and then we didn't leave the surgery center until like 6:30. And so like, I felt so bad for him because he was also obviously in pain. And then like, I had to pick him up, drop him back at home, and then go back out and get dinner and a cake and something for our son to open. Aww. That night. So it was a long day. I was up at 7 o'clock in the morning and then didn't go to bed until like 1 o'clock in the morning the next morning.
Wow.
It was, I was just running around. Luckily, my mom lives here in Jacksonville. So she was able, I texted her about her having to go pick up the kids. She's like, I can't, like, I have something to do until 5. I was like, well, I can just go get them. And then I picked them up and then she's texting me, are the kids okay? Is Hector okay? And I'm like, everybody's fine. I was like, but can you please meet me at my house? Because I don't know how I'm going to get him up the stairs. Because we live on the second floor and he wasn't supposed to put any weight. You know, obviously a certain day of surgery, no weight on his hips. But anyways, we made it through the day, made it through the couple of weeks. We're still moving along, trekking along. And my son had his, we postponed his birthday party to this past Sunday. We had it at Chuck E. Cheese. And invited 10 kids, and it was like the perfect amount of kids, and they had a blast. It was just nice to not have to do anything. Like, Chuck E. Cheese did everything.
Yeah,
for me.
I love Chuck E. Cheese. I still love Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, I know. And I don't know what it is about that pizza, but it's just so good.
We loved it when David. Oh, I know. And when David, so he's 21 now, but when he was 7, he was diagnosed with celiac, and of course we used to go to Chuck E. Cheese all the time, and I never understood when parents complained about Chuck E. Cheese. I was like, how do you not love Chuck E. Cheese? It's your, like, everything is in one spot. You can play all the games. Your kid can run around. You can run around with your kid, which is the whole idea.
Yep.
Somebody makes your dinner. Like, there's no cleaning up. I don't understand.
I know.
But once he was diagnosed with celiac, which means he can't have any gluten, there were no more Chuck E. Cheese trips.
No more and, Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, I know. But I would still, like, I still love Chuck E. Cheese.
It was because we contemplated for his fifth the party here at our apartment. But my husband was like, I don't want to entertain anybody. I don't want to have that family that like lingers awkwardly after the party is over. So we're like, we're just going to go somewhere where, you know, people, and then people can just like entertain themselves. So the one thing we did do was give the kids unlimited playtime, which we've been to a couple of people's birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese, and it can get expensive depending on how many kids you have. So normally, like, they just don't do the unlimited play because it's just super expensive, especially for about 10 kids. It's a lot. And my husband's like, no, we need to give the parents unlimited play. We don't want them to spend any money while they're here. Because, you know, when you go to these places, kids just want to play. Sure. And then they only have like 50 play points. And, you know, by 10 minutes has gone by and they don't have any more play points because they wasted it on every game, you know, they wanted to play.
Right.
So, like, we'll just do this one thing. We'll splurge a little bit on the unlimited play so that parents can, you know, let their kids unwind for a couple of hours. So. It was nice. And then our daughter took like 5 steps, walking steps at Chuck E. Cheese last past Sunday.
Wow.
And we're just like, well, I was just like, I recorded her. So we had, you know, parents there, parents came as well with their kids. And, this one parent, I have known her for a while. Like we went to church together. We were in high school together and she like picked her up and put Mariah down. And then all of a sudden, Mariah is just like taking steps towards her. Never seen her in her life.
Wow.
I'm like behind Mariah with my phone out, like recording her take steps towards this person. So it was nice for her. She took like 5 steps, but then now she refuses to walk. Like, she doesn't want to do it anymore. She's like, I already did it once. I'm done. Which is funny because my son did the same thing. Mm-hmm. He walked a few days before his first. And then the whole month of March didn't walk. And then by the time April came around, was like running. So I'm assuming that she's going to do the same thing now.
Yep.
But she, like, every single time you get her to walk, like, you stand her up and try to get her to walk towards you, she throws a fit. So I'm just like, you know what? When you're ready to walk, you'll just stand up and you'll walk on your own. So.
Oh, those are sweet days.
I know. And yeah, she's turning 1 on Sunday. So tomorrow is our last day with an 11-month-old. I cannot believe that she is 1 year old. I can't. It's just like bad. I look at her, I'm like, I was just pregnant with you.
Mm-hmm. At my 21-year-old and think that sometimes. And I do. I catch myself looking at him going, wow, like, you're a grown human.
I know. And like,
so weird.
We had a lady come back today at work. She is our billing manager. And she came back to work today. It was her first day back from maternity leave. And she was talking about the other day, she was talking to me. And she did great. Like, my first day back from maternity leave, as soon as I saw one of my coworkers, I like started bawling, crying. And I don't even know why. She just asked me, how are you doing? And then, the thing is, like, I saw on my way into work, I talked to like 3 people. Like, they asked me, hey, Joy, like, welcome back, blah, blah, blah. And as soon as I saw this one coworker that sits right next to me, I don't know what it is about what she said. She just asked me, Joy, how are you doing? And I like fell into her shoulder and started crying. So I was like half expecting our billing manager to be, you know, weepy today, but she wasn't. I was so proud of her. She just, a lot of people were like, you know, talking about her baby, and she was able to show her baby. Aww. So she was able to like get her mind off not being with her daughter.
That's so good.
Yeah,
that's hard.
I know. I'm just, power to, you know, moms who go
really
work.
That's true.
Yeah,
I know. We could talk forever about it. We could do a whole episode just on being a mom.
Oh,
goodness,
I know.
Gracious.
Yeah, but like, she was talking about how she lets her daughter nap on her, and I'm thinking to myself, like, don't be upset about having your daughter nap on you.
Yeah.
And you, in the grand scheme of things, they are only little. And if you'd say little, between the ages of 0 to 6, because I know my son is 5 now. He still likes to lay on me to nap or to take, or to go to sleep. And, you know, if you live until you're 90 years old, 6 years as opposed to 90 years is nothing. And you're not going to get that time back. Enjoy her laying on you. Just let her lay on you. And because like her husband's like, you're spoiling her. She's going to get used to it. Who cares? Yeah. As soon as she stops doing it, you are going to miss it. And you're going to wish that they were still that little.
I think spoiling falls under a different category.
It does. Like, she's a baby. Like she's supposed to be cuddled. She's supposed to be snuggled. She's supposed to be held. That is her number one job, is to be held and for you to take care of her. Enjoy
it. That's absolutely right.
And I told her, like, enjoy it. Don't let anybody make you feel guilty. Even if it's your own husband, don't make him let you feel guilty about holding your daughter while she's taking a nap.
It's true.
So I try, you know, this is her first kid, so like, and I have two, and you try to give your words of wisdom to new moms. So I don't know if she took it in stride, but she understands, like, if you look at it in that aspect where they could live to be a 90 or 100 years old, what is 6 years of their life? It's fine. She will be fine. She's going to love, she loves to snuggle. She loves to look, because as soon as she doesn't do it anymore, you're going to miss it.
It's true. They're going to be 20 something before you know it.
I know. Even my son turning 5 was like a blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. And I had an army wife friend who used to tell me that you'll blink and they'll be in kindergarten. And I blinked and he is about to be in kindergarten. I can't. I just can't believe it.
But anyway. Oh my goodness. Oh, it's always so good to catch up with you. Oh my goodness. Yes. Hours. How long is this podcast supposed to be?
Well, yeah, so always good to catch up with you too, Caroline. So let's just jump right in and hear more about Ashley's story and Sacred Sisterhood and the Trials of Life.
Hoo-ah, hello, and hallelujah, AWTR listeners. I'm Sharita Knobloch, your AWN owner and commander. Today, I am so excited to share the touching and empowering story of a personal friend, Ashley Murray. She will discuss with us today how Sacred Sisterhood has empowered and upheld her in the trials of life. Ashley Murray is an Army chaplain wife stationed at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. She and her husband, Jim, have 4 children, ages 11, 5, 4, and 1. They've been on active duty for 8 years. Ashley loves being a stay-at-home mama, discipling women, and sharing life, hospitality, and encouragement with others. She volunteers through various opportunities and has been a caregiver and advocate for her children's needs. Throughout a time of overwhelming tragedy and endless needs, Ashley's family had the chance to surrender all control, allowing both God and her military neighbors to bear the burdens too difficult for them to shoulder on their own. Thank you so much for coming onto the show and your willingness to share your story today, Ashley.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really looking forward to our conversation, and I personally have been privileged to follow your story ever since we met several years ago at Joint Base Lewis-McChord PWOC. So let's jump in and share that story with our listeners. Great. Tell us, how did you become a military spouse?
Well, my husband, Jim, and I were high school sweethearts. He joined the Army Reserves right out of high school, so I sent him off to basic training. That was back in 2002. And I think back on that time, and it was such a romantic time. I mailed him a letter a day. I helped him shine his boots and learn the phonetic alphabet. So we just kind of almost joined the military together learning things. And then we went to college together and got married in 2004. He transitioned to the Army Chaplain Candidate Program in 2006. And we came on to active duty in 2012 and moved to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, there with our 4-year-old daughter for our first duty station. And in true military fashion, we've had a baby at every base that we've been stationed at. So our daughter Margot was a civilian birth, but our son JD was born at Fort Campbell, our son Drew at Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington, and our son Ethan was born in Charlotte during our time at Fort Jackson, where we are currently.
I'm excited to learn more about your journey, and I know it's been a joyful one, but it's also, of course, been challenging one, as it is with most military families. Tell us, Ashley, what happened in the fall of 2018 that changed your family?
So, kind of looking back now, the way I put it was that our family had some health issues with our younger 2 kids, and As I get to know people, I just kind of dive into what kind of took place over about a year and a half that started back in the summer of 2018. I found that we don't hold a corner on suffering, and there's healing that can take place whenever I can share vulnerably and appropriately with others. So thank you again for letting me share our story. We had kind of been cruising along within our military career and felt that this was our family's calling to the military. We loved the military culture. By the summer of 2018, we had experienced 2 moves, 2 deployments, special operations assignment. We were preparing for a career course and had orders to an overseas assignment. We felt that we had had some hard times, but it was a pretty predictable Army life. So that's kind of what we were feeling when we made a cross-country move in the summer of 2018 from Washington State to South Carolina for a 6-month career course. We drove our 2 cars, our 3 kids, a dog, and a guinea pig across the country. But in God's providence, he was bringing us back home, which is about an hour from where we grew up and where our family is. It's where Jim went to basic training. So it felt like we were coming full circle. We waited for on-post housing because we had really seen the value in the past of being on post and having a military community. And with our career course, we wanted to get to know other families and students and instructors during that short time. We had been on the wait list for housing to become available, and my parents graciously let us stay at their home with enough room for all of us for a few months. And so we were with them. And in June, I took a home pregnancy test and found out that we were pregnant. And in July, we had our first ultrasound appointment. We went in excited to be able to share the gender with our family. And at the ultrasound, we got an exciting shock. I was on the exam table with the ultrasound tech. She zoomed out and said, "Do you see what I see?" And I looked up and there were 2 babies on the screen, and we were pregnant with twins. Jim and I both, we were laughing and excited and a little bit shocked. And so Jim even said, like, "Make sure that there's not a third, something else, someone else hiding in there." So we kind of came away from that appointment excited that we were having identical twin boys. But due to the fact that they shared a placenta, I was immediately a high-risk pregnancy, and I transferred to a specialist for an ultrasound appointment every 2 weeks to monitor the babies. So that was our exciting news in July. And then in August, we moved into our house on post. We got busy connecting with our neighbors. I got connected with a homeschool community in the area. We had our 2 older kids in a co-op, finding a church. We hung picture frames on the wall, all the normal transition that you do as a military spouse. But then in September, our 2.5-year-old son, Drew, began having unexplained seizures. And it was alarming. So we started seeing specialists, getting tested for what was going on. And we had been moved in for less than a month, but we already had people who offered us meals. They gave Drew get well soon bags for the hospital. They just really shared support for our family when we didn't really have, kind of had an unknown period of what was going on with him. It was a scary time, and we were at high alert because we didn't really know what would trigger a seizure. Mm. And so as they became more frequent, our normal life was halted, and we were needing to know how to support him and be patient for appointments to be set up and referrals to go through, the testing and results to come back. So while we were at a hospital stay for an EEG testing for Drew, I walked over to one of my ultrasound appointments for our twins, and Jim stayed with Drew. And at that appointment, I found out that our twins were diagnosed with twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. It's called TTTS, and it's a rare disorder that can happen to babies that share a placenta when there are missed connections of blood vessels that allow the babies to grow at different rates. Our twins were at an advanced stage of TTTS and needed medical intervention to keep them alive. I was given information of what our treatment options were, and I took it all back to Jim. My parents came and stayed with our older kids, and Jim and I went to Charlotte, North Carolina, to the closest fetal care monitoring center that performed a laparoscopic surgery to correct the imbalance in the placenta and give the babies an equal share of the placenta. And that would give them the best chance for continuing to grow in the womb. We had a successful surgery on October 8, 2018 for our twins, Benjamin and Ethan. And we chose to do a 24-hour monitoring on them since they were 24 weeks gestation. They had other interventions that they could do. They were viable outside of the womb. We were at a facility that had great medical care and interventions if needed. So at the end of that monitoring, we had another ultrasound, and it was clear that the twins' heart rate were dangerously low, so we went ahead with an emergency C-section. Benjamin was born at 1 pound, 3 ounces, and Ethan was born at 1 pound, 14 ounces. Jim was able to go with the boys as they were given their interventions immediately after birth, and Benjamin struggled in the NICU and passed away about 2 hours later. He had his last heartbeats on my chest. Mm. Ethan is our surviving twin. He spent 120 days in the NICU, which could be a whole other talk of how God sustained his life and surrounded us with an amazing medical team. But during that time, Jim and I, we pretty much switched roles. Jim was granted an educational pause from his career course, and they said his place of duty was wherever our family was. So it was for a little over 4 months that our family went through a few phases, I feel like, kind of having a beginning stage of that trauma and grief and loss of Benjamin, and then ongoing medical needs and long-term care needed for Ethan. So Jim stayed with me during the recovery phase, and we really just tried to hold on to each other and to God during those early weeks in the hospital. And then we transitioned to the Ronald McDonald House that became our routine to be able to care for Ethan and connected us with our older kids for them to be able to come up with us. Ultimately, it worked out well for Jim to stay down in Columbia at Fort Jackson with Jim and the normal routine that the kids were in. And I stayed up in Charlotte to care for Ethan. We even told our kids that mommy is on a deployment, just like daddy. So that is kind of how we took it, that we were taking this time as our family mission to get our baby brother mm-hmm. home. It helped us to think of it that way. And Ethan came home in February of 2019. It was a relief to have him home, but it was also a stress because mm-hmm. He did come home on oxygen support. He had medications, breathing treatments. He was also immune compromised, so he couldn't be around other people. But my daughter, Margot, she was 10 at the time, and she likes to say that we were a family team and we had an arsenal of hand sanitizer and Clorox wipes. Like, that was what our life was like. But during that time with Ethan, we're so thankful for the medical specialist who advocated for our children because we couldn't do it all. We had a great team helping us to answer or to get Ethan stable, but then we also had a wonderful team that was answering the questions about Drew's seizures. So during this whole process, Drew was put on medication, and even with several changes and adjustments with his medication, it wasn't able to control the seizure episodes. So after additional testing and several MRIs, we found out 3 months after bringing Ethan home that Drew had a brain tumor. And at that time, we just felt overwhelmed again. Mm-hmm. It was another medical crisis for one of our kids and another unknown. But we were referred up to a team in Memphis, Tennessee. They had a whole pediatric neurology floor. So that was where we took him for a pediatric neurosurgeon to perform a tumor resection. So it's basically brain surgery that he went through. Jim and Drew, Ethan and I drove to Memphis, Tennessee in June of 2019 for more testing and preparation for surgery. And on June 20th, Drew had brain surgery to remove a benign tumor. It was non-cancerous, and we just praise the Lord that they were able to get the area that was causing issues He woke up from surgery without any issues, and he was released from the hospital 2 days later and able to come home.
Well, Ashley, you know me, and it takes a lot to make me speechless. And your testimony, your story is one that is simultaneously difficult to respond to, but also just so moving how you guys have experienced so much in the last 18 months as a military family and have suffered loss, but also seen God's hand and his victory in all of that. Just, wow, that is absolutely remarkable. I know that you've attributed your faith and, you know, of course, your husband and his parents and family as big helpers with all that. But tell us about your experiences as a military spouse. How did that help or hinder the difficult news of all of these very intense diagnoses?
You know, there are so many opportunities that the military gives you to refine your character. I think anyone who has even spent a day in, you know, with someone in army boots or being those, there is just so much refining that happens. There's a lot of holding on loosely, hurry up and wait, really testing your patience and refining your resilience. I learned a lot of healthy ways to deal with stress during hard deployments, and they helped me with those same lessons in the NICU environment. Lessons like not reacting in the moment, processing trauma, dealing with disappointment, communicating and building trust with our spouse over long distance, feeling resentment over the loss of shared experiences. And since our NICU stay happened over the holidays, it was another time of a season of celebrating holidays in a different way and in different locations.
Those are things that I think from the outside looking in, we would really consider that celebrating holidays in a very different way. And I know you mentioned a few minutes ago that this was like mommy's on a deployment to help baby brother get well and come home. And I love how you framed that, but it still, of course, was challenging. And you also attribute your journey and your success in that and the healing and that others provided meaningful support during your difficult times. Share with us a little bit more about the support you received.
This is part of our story that has been so humbling for me. For people to see our pain and to enter in and have their own pain, it is something that has become very special to me and really hard for me to quantify of how they have entered in with us. We have had so many people who were supporting us and praying for us and going to battle for us. And I'm still not even aware of all the people who surrounded us. We had a strong support system, like you said, with our family, with our church, our friends. But this is the group that I called my sacred sisterhood that really refreshed my soul. They were military spouses who stepped in the gap, because when trauma happens, it's something that you can't carry on your own. It's too heavy. And these ladies, they picked up the pieces. They said, this is what we do. And they went about serving my family. So to me, a sacred moment is when there's a time in life where God pulls back the curtain and he shows us what really matters. And in those moments, these Army wives who understood a service culture, who know sacrifice, they came alongside to support me as one of their own. And I think of Proverbs 17:17, which says, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. And that's what these sisters, they were sisters born for adversity. They were the ones that helped to carry our family because they entered in and became part of the support system around me.
Although I haven't been in your shoes or your metaphorical army boots with the level of trauma that you experienced, I totally get what you're saying about the sacred sisterhood and other military spouses stepping in the gap as battle buddies when the worst happens. And, you know, I'm not going to make it all about me, but a year ago, almost to the day, someone very, very close to me attempted to take his own life, and that I was the person that they called before and after the attempt. And my, of course, my husband was deployed, and I had sisters and people that rallied around me to let me grieve and lament and process and just to encourage me in that, to make sure that we were eating and that my kids were taken care of, you know. And it was, I can't compare it to what you've been through and the loss and the grief and the uncertainty with your little tiny humans. But I think considering sacred sisterhood is a beautiful, beautiful gift. So tell us a little bit more about the moments that created that deeper connection with the sacred sisterhood and when you knew that you were part of this sisterhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, it resonates with me to bring this topic up, because we all go through challenging times. And whenever you're going through a challenging time, and for someone to insert themselves into your life in those hard times, it becomes a defining moment. So like you said, those moments, this for me has been an almost 2-year time frame where it's been a marathon of medical needs. And I've become a full-time caregiver with my children. But it's amazing to me to see how God provided people to provide the refreshment that I needed along the way. I honestly could spend the rest of the time talking about people who served our family. I started writing out all the names and kind of how each specific story just perfectly was the character type of this person, came at the exact time that I needed that kind of refreshment. And I could, again, like spend the rest of the time just talking about that, of how God brought the right people at the right time. But the thing that I found most impactful was that these friends who took time to show up for me, they served me in ways that were unique to them. They offered what they were best at and passionate to do to help me and my family. They didn't have to do it all, but when they felt led to do something, they followed through with it. Whether they were a quiet behind-the-scenes servant, a professional counselor, a senior leadership spouse, whether they had a heart for caregiving or tutoring children in schoolwork, they knew how to organize a care calendar, whether they were gifted with words of encouragement, creating beautiful flower bouquets, sharing practical gifts, or having just a ministry of presence to enter into the hard days with me. They showed up in those hard and beautiful days to care for me in the seen and unseen ways I needed in order to be refreshed to take the next hurdle that came. Kind of my examples of the sacred sisterhood that I've just been treasuring.
Those aspects of sisterhood and friendship and mill spousehood and really them joining you in the trenches of a season of life that is truly the lowest of lows, grief and heartache, yet helping carry you, you know, probably some days really like helping you move one foot in front of the other to keep trekking up that mountain to reach that victory with healing for your children. So thank you so much for sharing the first part of your story. Gosh, I think we could talk just the entire time about your journey, and we're going to continue that in just a few moments with the moving conversation that we're having right now, but we're going to take a super quick break. And so listeners, hang on. We'll be right back with more from Ashley Murray and Sacred Sisterhood in the Trials of Life.
Types of military pay that can be excluded from gross income. This is a Money Minute from In Charge Education Foundation and MilitaryMoney.com. When you're doing your taxes this year, make sure you pay attention to these types of military pay and allowances that can be excluded from your gross income. Combat Zone. If you are a member of the armed forces serving in a designated combat zone, then you can exclude certain types of pay from your income. You need only serve for one or more days in a month to qualify for exclusion for the entire month. Retirement contributions. Generally, you can deduct some portion of the contributions you make to your traditional IRA for the year. However, if you or your spouse were covered by an employer-maintained plan at any time during the year, then not all of these deductions may be eligible. Sale of a home. You may not have to pay tax on the profit realized from the sale of your main home. A deduction of up to $250,000 of gain, or $500,000 if married filing jointly, is generally available upon the sale of a main home. This Money Minute is made possible by InCharge Debt Solutions. Visit us online at www.incharge.org.
Need more information to engage, educate, encourage, and empower you in your military life journey? At ArmyWifeNetwork.com, you can find more than 2,000 blog posts about deployment, ECS, Army life, health, and more. You can also check out our most popular resource, Post with the Most. Aaron from Fort Riley says, I use AWN on a weekly basis to get the support my family and I need to thrive in this military life. Tap into all of our empowering resources at www.armywifenetwork.com.
Welcome back, listeners. We are chatting with Ashley Murray and hearing about her personal story and the importance of sisterhood and community. The first half of our conversation, we mentioned the heartache and the uncertainty with the health issues with your kiddos, but also how people were specifically almost divinely called to serve you and to, as you said, step into those gaps as the sacred sisterhood. Let's go ahead and continue the conversation. How has God revealed the blessing of the military community in your life beyond what you've already shared?
God has revealed so much to our family through this past year and a half. We had some really specific defining moments along our journey, mainly in the early days of our grief and loss. But we had just the community that rallied around us. It was humbling for us to see people who come alongside us with their own difficult circumstances, and they know how to comfort us. So we had a prayer team from our neighborhood that met in our front yard the week that we went up to Charlotte for our surgery. I didn't even know that they were outside and they were going to battle for us, but they texted us to let us know that they were praying and that they would continue to pray. We had the day that our twins were born, our two next door neighbors came over to my parents who were staying at our house, and they said, hey, we've got the kids, go to Charlotte, go see your grandbabies. And it's because of them intervening and doing, they stepped out from their comfort zone and they knew that it would be an important time. But they gave our family a gift of connection, and my parents were the only ones who were able to actually hold Benjamin. So it became a really important gift that they gave to our family. We had just a lot of different ways of people connecting with us. We had someone who gave us the idea of putting Benjamin's name into different places. They started it with a picture of his name written in leaves, and that started our Benjamin name book, where people would send us pictures of his name written in sand on the beach, drawn in chalk on the sidewalk. And I know that you sent me one from the top of a mountain hike. So just having people who took the time to be mindful of us and share a meaningful picture, it was very healing for me. So we just, again, had so many ways that these were examples of moments in time when we were going through something so separate and intense from all of our normal everyday life. We felt removed, but we had people who entered into our painful experience or acknowledged it and respected that hard season. And that made so much of an impact on me because it was a reminder that we weren't alone and that we were cared for by others. So that was what I think of with this sisterhood and this community. And Galatians 6:2 says, bear one another's burdens. And that's exactly the example that this military community showed me. We did a ruck march with one of Jim's units a few years ago, and it was called a family day, and it was a 12-mile ruck march. lots of fun. but I had been participating in a Bible study where we painted rocks that we had written hard trials and hurts on them, and I had those rocks with me in my ruck, and another friend walked with me and carried half of the load of those rocks. So we symbolically carried those burdens, but we also had the physical weights to remind us. And even though I'm not a therapist, I know that trauma changes you and your body carries trauma and past hurts. And so I'm reminded of that ruck march and the weight that was distributed so that we could both finish the race. And that's what I think that this community has provided, the support, and it's so important. I like the phrase, find your tribe and love them hard, because you have to surround yourself with people who have great impact on you, and they have impact into your relationships and your life and your health. And so for me, there has been a blessing in finding my community and loving them well, because they've been the ones who have been a blessing to me, to support me, and for someone that I can fall back on.
I'm not a therapist yet either. I'm working on it. So someday, but I just took a crisis and trauma class this semester, and you are so right. You're on the money there, Ashley, with how, when a trauma happens, whether it's, you know, very rarely are traumas planned. They're, you know, that's part of the trauma, is not knowing that it was coming and then trying to understand how to navigate that experience, but you do carry it. And I think one of the big dangers in trauma is isolating ourselves. And a lot of things with military life, military spouse life, can be very traumatic for us. And that's where those battle buddies, the tribes, the sacred sisterhoods come into play for sure. Where do you see this experience making an impact within your sphere of influence?
Yeah, you said the word isolation. And in some ways, I feel like this has been a season of isolation for me. So whenever you say sphere of influence, I'm like, well, I'm at home with my kids and I can't go outside because I still have kids that have immune compromised issues. And I think that that's important to bring up, because there's a lot of us who, there's different seasons in our lives of being, having to be home, or having to focus on work or something. You feel really isolated. But I think I have learned that I need to rest in the opportunities that I've been given. I've been given opportunities, and I learn from them, and I'm not limiting myself by saying no to things that are outside of my comfort zone. So we have tried to walk through open doors of areas to be able to share our story, because everyone goes through hard times. And so many people go through really traumatic things that halt their life, and that you feel like you have just had your had pieces just fall on the ground. And it has helped me in those moments to have other people who are further along in their healing to come back and help to show where God is at certain points, and to speak truth into my life and to care for me. So that's kind of the sphere of influence that I'm finding, is saying yes to times and opportunities. We stayed at the Ronald McDonald House, and we've been able to connect with families who were there, been able to help with things in something that I never would have had an opportunity. So I feel like where the military is kind of its own, we live on post, so we say we're in a gated community. We were able to enter into this community, military community. We volunteered for this service, and we're able to invest in those around us here. But then God gave us these opportunities at the Ronald McDonald House. We have supported an organization called Save the Storks, and they heard about our story and wanted to name an ultrasound bus after our son Benjamin. So we were able to, you know, go and be encouraged, and also encourage these people that are being able to do ultrasounds. We have kind of a new tribe of friends with medically complex children from our time in the NICU, and people that we have gotten to know. I've still been involved in Bible studies on post and PWOC. I've had a season of not being able to go physically to places like even our local church, but being able to watch things online and being able to connect even virtually with people. And then even, you know, in my own little cul-de-sac, just being able to walk over to the park and talk one-on-one with people. So I think that that's all things that I'm learning to slowly, I guess, have my own sphere of influence, and then wait for it to expand, and not to try to get ahead of what God wants to do in my own life, and then the ripple effect beyond.
Well, you're coming up on 2 years since Drew's diagnosis with the seizures, and you're right around that 18-month mark, I think, for Benjamin and Ethan's birthday. So how are all your kiddos now?
Ethan is now 16 months old and he is over 20 pounds. He is a full toddler. He is walking now. He is babbling and giving high fives. He's also getting into the bathroom and the toilet bowl.
Yay!
Yeah. But it's amazing to see the resilience of children and mm-hmm. how much healing has taken place as we've supported him where he's needed it. He's still in weekly therapies to help him catch up for his age since he was born 4 months premature. He has chronic lung disease and takes breathing treatments to help his lungs heal. But I'm still so in awe of him. At birth, he was a micro preemie. He was 1 pound, 14 ounces, 11 inches long. His eyes were still fused shut. He didn't have the top layer of his skin yet developed. He needed a ventilator to breathe for several months. So now to see him smile and have an excitement to play every day, he just loves life, and he really is our miracle baby. Mm-hmm. We're really just very blessed to have him with us. And Drew has been seizure-free since surgery, so he has not had any seizures since then. We praise God for mm-hmm. just his complete healing. He doesn't have any sensory deficit or loss of function from surgery, which again is just amazing. And we call him our warrior, and that's what he's been through, the fear and frustration of seizures that he experienced. He still remembers them and all the testing that he had to do and the surgery. We keep telling him that we know where his help comes from. It comes mm-hmm. from the maker of heaven and earth and the one who designed his body and his brain and gave all these medical professionals the skills. So Drew is still on seizure control medication, and we go back to our neurologist in June for testing and to wean the dosage. And we just celebrated his 4th birthday with a Blue Angels theme. He wants to be a pilot when he grows up. So it's amazing that he doesn't have any limitations right mm-hmm. now, that, you know, he's made a full recovery.
It's almost impossible for me to like process all of this in my head. Like I met Drew, like, I was there like in the vicinity when he was born and the meals and seeing him as a newborn at JBLM, and now just everything you guys have been through, and, you know, from 1 pound, 14 ounces for Ethan to tearing stuff up and playing in the toilet is just... fantastic. I never thought I would say that about a toddler, but it is so great that he is playing in the toilet. That is good, good news. Gosh. Oh, that makes me so happy. I've got goosebumps all over my body right now.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Ashley, how has your family moved forward from these challenging times?
I like that phrase, move forward, because we haven't like just moved on. We've this is now part of our, we still have reminders. I mean, even whenever you said, how are our kids doing now? I still think back on how their lives started, how our life has changed, how we are a family of 7, and we only have 6 in our family here on earth. So all of those things, we still have that reminder of tragedy, but we have something bigger that we remember. We still have the sibling squabbles. I still get frustrated at my kids and everything, but there's a deeper gratitude for the time that we spend together. And I've seen that there's a bond between our kids that really was because of that separation and that adversity that they experienced, and how they are connected to each other now. I just thank God for ways that they have grown and really, you know, really learned from times apart. We've tried to be intentional to do day dates with our kids because each of them individually, we want to connect with them, because there's still a lot of times that they've had to sacrifice their time and their attention for medical needs. Jim and I have also had to be intentional about staying connected to each other. We've had to just really be transparent about our struggles and our victories, grief and reminders of painful times, and our thoughts and hopes and needs. It helps that he's Army chaplain. And so as a chaplain, he's really connected in with family. And so I'm really blessed that he does have a lot of natural skills, but then also skills that he's learned in how to process grief and how to connect and everything. But we're doing life, even trying out all these things ourselves before he goes and counsels with others too. We have found that we've, by the grace of God, we've become a stronger family. We've been able to encourage others. When I think that we have learned this time that people want others who are authentic and vulnerable to connect with and to do life with. And so as a family, we don't try to do it all, but we try to do the next thing and love the next person in front of us. So I feel like that's how we are continuing to move forward.
And moving forward with that level of intentionality and depth, those that probably will only happen forged by fire, something beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the pressure and the intensity of what you guys went through, there has been something beautiful come mm-hmm. from the outside looking in, impossible. And so mm-hmm. that is truly, I would say, truly miraculous. And I encourage you guys to, of course, press on in that. And I'm so excited to see where you mm-hmm. all go from here. Ashley, we're about out of time, but we've got a couple more questions. So for those who might be in a similar position as you with possibly being diagnosed with TTTS or loss of a child or just really intense grief and suffering, what are some of the resources that have helped you navigate this season as far as how can our listeners get connected to those resources?
Yeah, so personally for us, we had a lot of support from the TTTS Foundation, TTTSFoundation.org, for the twins diagnosis of twin transfusion syndrome. So they were a great resource for us. So it's a rare disorder, but it's amazing how once you become part of the club, then there's so many more people who become aware of it. We also, for us personally, we're really encouraged by Save the Storks, that offers pregnancy centers a mobile medical unit that has an ultrasound machine on it. For us, that was really vital for us to see the power of ultrasound in order to save our twins' life. And then for this organization that we've already supported to then reach out to us and want to name one of their buses after our son, Benjamin, it was a very special thing. And so that was a great resource. For grief and loss, we've had several books that we've really resonated with us. There's a book called Suffering by Paul David Tripp. Holding On to Hope by Nancy Guthrie was kind of more personal for child loss. I Will Carry You by Angie Smith was another one. For military helps, we had a book called Sacred Spaces by Corey Weathers that was really meaningful to us during our time in special operations with frequent deployments. But then it became a really important piece in our understanding that we had different traumas that we experienced during this past 2 years, and that we could have those individual sacred time that we could acknowledge in each other's lives, and they didn't have to be the same. So Corey Weathers has a podcast as well called Life Giver that we really have been impacted by. And then personally for me, I've had a Facebook group that I created with Ethan for his journey, and we've continued to let people in on that process, especially if you've had a premature birth or are going through something within the NICU environment. You can look back at posts with that, and that's Ethan the Strong was what we named his Facebook group, and we've been really transparent in that about kind of the ongoing need for our kids.
Thank you for sharing those resources. I'm glad I have several of those written down for future reference, for referrals, that kind of thing. And I've really enjoyed Corey's book, Sacred Spaces. I read it a couple of years ago, I think, and it really resonated with me as well, even though we've gone through different kinds of trials, but it's written from a military spouse perspective, and it's super encouraging. So we encourage our listeners to check out any of those resources, and we can list those in our show notes. So you can be sure to swipe up, swipe down, swipe over, or also see them on our website. Finally, Ashley, our time is concluded together, but we have really enjoyed our conversation. And one thing that we love here at AWN because everyone has such different stories they share from week to week on this podcast. We want to know what empowerment means to each of our guests, as it is one of our primary pillars. So if you could please finish the sentence, empowerment is.
Empowerment is advocating for the weakest. It is leveraging my best to help someone else. It's what I gave to my kids and my family, and it is what this sisterhood gave to me. I'm so thankful for the empowered women around me who leverage their time, their skills, and abilities and talents for me on my darkest days.
I can't think of a more beautiful or impactful way to wrap up our conversation. Ashley, thank you for your willingness to share your story, your vulnerability, the encouragement to seek out and find our own sacred sisterhoods wherever we're at for channels of empowerment and encouragement. So we wish you all the best, and we wish you health for your family. Know that our AWN command team will continue praying for you guys as you move forward and navigate the future seasons of your life. So thank you for joining us today.
Wow, that is a powerful story. It's incredible how such goodness and beauty can come out of such heartbreak. I am really grateful to Sharita for these interviews, especially with people who really understand what we're going through, and then they're willing to share their story to encourage us in our hardest seasons.
Another aspect of AWN that I really appreciate is knowing that not only our guests get this MilSpouse life, but also our AWN command teams. So this week's AWN info objective comes for our command team behind the scenes, blog editor assistant Angie Andrews. Angie and her family are currently stationed in Okinawa, Japan. She shared a photo of the U.S. flag and the Japan flying by each other and wrote, "Seeing both flags flying freely is my favorite reminder of what a privilege it is to be stationed at an OCONUS duty station. I truly feel this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me, and while I can't say that everything is always easy, it is certainly a wonderful adventure. I feel lucky that my husband and I are experiencing Japan together and are very blessed to be here. Privilege seems like an understatement sometimes. Japan will always be very special to me. What an honor to be here, and how amazing to see both flags flying in the same sky together, a sky that has been the backdrop for so many beautiful memories we're making."
It really sounds like Angie has embraced so much of being at an OCONUS duty station. I mean, that's just such an adventure. I mean, so we have actually never been stationed anywhere cool overseas at all, but I know a lot of people who have, and I know that OCONUS station, being stationed overseas to any places like that, bring different challenges. But it really sounds like that Angie has just, she really has a good perspective about it. I don't know, Joy, have you guys been stationed overseas? What are your thoughts about that?
We actually haven't. We were only in the Army for 3 years, and even being a military daughter, we never got stationed overseas. My dad did a lot of his moving around, traveling the world before my mom and him got married. So we never got to go overseas. But in respect to Angie's post about her experiences in Japan, I mean, I can kind of relate because the only like major place we moved to when we were in was going to the Maryland area at Fort Meade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anytime you go to a new place, you get apprehensive and scared and anxious, and you don't know what to expect. So I was just like that. I hadn't been out of Florida before, and when we moved there, we didn't know anybody.
It really is all about perspective, and it's so nice to be able to hear about and talk about all the different experiences and adventures that we have as military families. I think that's sometimes that gets lost in all the other stuff, because that's how we empower each other. And speaking of which, it's time to hear from our AWN Empowerment Agent, Ashley, with this week's Empowerment Patrol Report.
Hello, AWTR listeners. I am Ashley Gimmel, your AWN Empowerment Agent. For this week's Empowerment Patrol Report, we are showcasing Band of Blogger recipient Katarina Engel for her contribution to our love theme this month. Katarina and her family currently reside in Fort Bliss, Texas. Katarina met her husband in 2001 while he was stationed in Germany. After experiencing the first taste of military life while dating, for example, 9/11, school in the U.S., and a few field problems, they got married in November 2002 in Germany. After their first deployment as a married couple, they received their first orders to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. After recovering from a culture shock, Katarina started her college journey. 5 years, two children, one dog, and another deployment later, she enthusiastically graduated from Liberty University with a bachelor's degree in business administration and international business. Katarina loves to learn. She continued her educational adventure through a life coaching certificate, an assistant resiliency training certificate, and currently she is working on her certificate as an accredited financial counselor. Katarina is volunteering with Shared Hope International as well as EP Cares and bringing awareness to the community about minor domestic sex trafficking. Additionally, Katarina volunteers with the Army Community Service Financial Readiness Program. In her free time, Katarina loves to explore the outdoors and travel. She loves reading books and playing board games with her family. Thanks again to Katarina Engel for doing your part to empower military families around the globe. Until next time, I'm your AWN Empowerment Agent, Ashley Gimmel, reminding you we are never completely alone on this military life journey.
Congratulations to Katarina Engel of our Band of Bloggers for being this week's MRE winner. Listeners, here at Army Wife Network, we really think it's important to walk with one another through all aspects of this military life, the fun ones and the difficult ones. We think it's important to, first of all, laugh and cry with each other, and second, be a source of empowerment for one another. In fact, if you know someone who really embodies empowerment, we'd love to hear about them. To tell us all about them, head over to our website, armywifenetwork.com, and nominate them for our Everyday Empowerment Award. On our website, look under the menu for Get Involved and click the tab Everyday Empowerment or AWN Empowers. You can also view our previous winners in our Empowerment Gallery.
Joy, thank you so much for sharing that information.
Of course.
I am, yeah, it's fun to have that kind of stuff and to show that we are just this community of great people who do that for each other.
Exactly.
I'm really glad that we acknowledge and honor spouses who are empowering one another. And coming up next is our one and only, the incredible News 6 correspondent, Jolene McNutt. Jolene is great about bringing us this week's top stories and need to know news.
No news is typically good news in this military life,
except on Army Wife Talk Radio.
So here is our AWN News 6 correspondent with this week's top stories.
Hi, Caroline and Joy. Here's this week's top stories. CBS News reported that in early March, the real Rosie the Riveter died at the age of 95. CBS said Rosalind Walter, the inspiration behind the symbol, died in Manhattan. She was just 19 when she volunteered to take a night shift position on a Connecticut assembly line. She was profiled in a local newspaper in 1942, and songwriters Red Evans and John Jacob Loeb wrote the tune Rosie the Riveter, which was a hit, and she was cast in American history. Her rolled-up sleeves and headscarf were just part of the legacy that she left behind. Rosalind Walter went on to help fund children's programs, wildlife conservation efforts, and was also PBS's biggest funder. Watch CBS's video tribute linked at armywifenetwork.com. For the first time ever, future soldiers and cadets were sworn in by Army astronaut Colonel Andrew Morgan, currently serving as the flight engineer on the International Space Station. KEYC News from Mankato, Minnesota, said that it was done to showcase the diversity of career paths available when signing up for service. More than 1,000 future soldiers from 150 locations were sworn in via live telecast from the space station. Read more at KEYC.com. Panera Bread may be coming to a military installation near you. The Army and Air Force Exchange Service has partnered with Panera and will be coming to select locations beginning in 2020, according to Command Sergeant Major Louis Reyes. This is part of the exchange Be Fit focus on healthy lifestyles and an effort to bring healthier dining options. Read more at armywifenetwork.com. BMC Toys will be creating new plastic green Army women, reported armytimes.com. Last year, Vivian, a six-year-old girl from Arkansas, wrote BMC Toys asking why they didn't have women toy soldiers. This sparked a Kickstarter campaign that reached its funding goal in under 12 hours. According to BMC Toys, the Plastic Army Women will include 36 figures in 12 different poses and will be available in OD green, tan, and pink. Among the figures, some of the most anticipated are a Pathfinder Captain, Running Rifleman, and Military Working Dog and Handler. A separate Rosie the Riveter figure will also be available in fall 2020. Find the link to all of our News 6 reports at armywifenetwork.com. This is your AWN News 6 correspondent, Jolene McNutt, signing out.
Jolene's desire to bring us the most up-to-date military life news and her diligence and her concern for making sure that we are always informed is something that I'm really grateful for. Listeners, we will be right back after this quick 60-second break.
Engage, educate, encourage, empower. Advertise. AWN has many opportunities for promotion of your brand, service, or product, including web creatives, blog posts, social media promotion, giveaways, and podcast audio commercials. Email empower@armywifenetwork.com to get started. We sincerely thank you for your support to empower military spouses, families, and their service members around the globe.
Well, listeners, we have reached that time in our mission to say that our mission is accomplished for this episode of AWTR. A quick reminder that we hope all of you will join us each Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for our weekly Facebook Live MilSpouse Empowerment Moments. You can also subscribe to our podcast on the podcast app of your choice and catch new episodes Mondays and Thursdays each week. Tune in for our next full-length episode of AWTR when our AWN Command Team member, owner, and commander, Sharita Knobloch, will be interviewing Kelsey Madden to talk about recovering from addiction, a mill spouse's journey. It's going to be another empowering show.
Listeners, we want to be a place that meets you right where you are. We are here cheering you on no matter what military life throws your way. Engage, educate, encourage. Army Wife Talk Radio is your source for military life empowerment. And this is your AWN Command Team signing out.
Thank you for tuning in to Army Wife Talk Radio. The views and opinions expressed in our show are personal. AWTR is in no way affiliated with the Department of Defense or any other branch of the armed services, and inclusion in our show does not reflect endorsement by the DOD, any local government, or their agencies. Until the next episode, head over to www.armywifenetwork.com to connect with all of our empowering resources. Engage, educate, encourage. AWN is your source for military life empowerment.